It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Yeah, Seth, they just showed that pick six you were talking about. The linebacker strolled in backwards into the end zone. Yeah.
Well, no, and it was funny because Al Michaels was saying, like, well, there was no whistle. We'll see how they rule this. Because the ball never touched the ground. So it was either a fumble or an interception, but yeah, the ball never touched the ground. And this is when I know that Al Michaels was as sleepy as you were because of how boring that game was.
Past his bedtime, man.
Yeah, and I couldn't, like, it happens. It's just, man, it just happens. It happens too regularly with Al.
It does these days.
And you're trying to be polite. You know, he's like, well, there's no whistle. We'll see whether they rule this an interception or not, or a forward pass or not. Like, it doesn't matter, Al. The ball never touched. I mean, yes, it matters in terms of how they write it up, but the ball never touched the ground.
Yep.
The rules, it doesn't matter whether it was a fumble or an interception. If the ball doesn't touch the ground, they're going to let it keep playing.
They're going to let it go. Yep. All right, let's stack the card for this weekend. It's a good weekend of NFL football. These are the games that don't involve the Texans. I would say, if the Texans, and you guys know how we do this, we do a couple undercard games, couple mid-card, semi-main event, and then the main event of the weekend. I think there's three or four games, at least three games you could argue are, well, four if you include the Texans. It could be, as they like to say, this could be a main event anywhere in the country, Mean Gene. There's a lot of good games this weekend. But we'll start at the bottom of the card. These are the more compelling, lower on the board games. Mm-hmm. The London game at 8:30 is always a fun watch, just because you feel like you're getting away with something, watching live sports at 8:30 in the morning on a Sunday. Unfortunately, it often involves the Jacksonville Jaguars, which makes it a little less watchable. This one involves the New England Patriots and the Jacksonville Jaguars. This has the potential to be a really ugly game with a fantastic storyline, because there's a chance that if the Jaguars lose to the Patriots, they might just open the door of the plane on the way home and shove Doug Peterson out of the plane and drop him in the Atlantic Ocean. Yeah.
He might, like, revoke his visa or something.
Yes.
I don't know what they're... It's getting ugly in Jacksonville. I guess it's been ugly, but this is like a fever pitch here.
Yeah.
And I would imagine it's got to be hard as a Jaguars fan where you lose all these home games to London, and probably half the time you're like, oh, thank God, I don't want to go see him anyway. Right, at least I've got an excuse now.
Yep. What do you think? You watched New England last week. You think Drake May in week two has a shot here against the – got to have a shot, right? The Jags are – they got two teams got the same record right now.
Oh, 100%. Two bad football teams. Of course they have a shot. Yeah. No, and I think that the Patriots defense, that actually – I should have brought that up more this week. The Patriots' defense has defended the run pretty well. So last week, those two big explosive plays, that's not the norm. So that was good. The Patriots' run defense on a down-by-down basis, you know, won more downs versus the Texans than the Texans did, but then they let up some of those big plays. Yeah. I don't think the Jaguars have what it takes to combat any of that.
Jags 5.5 is the spread right now. Jags are favored by 5.5 in that game. That's interesting. All right, next one on the undercard. Again, the undercard is typically games that have a real, like, one wrinkle in them that makes it interesting. Cincinnati at Cleveland is interesting to me. When does the hourglass run out of sand for Deshaun Watson? Does the hourglass run out of sand on Kevin Stefanski before a benching of Deshaun Watson? And now Cincinnati is trying to kind of save their season. They're 2-4 right now.
Right. Well, and Nick Chubb comes back this week.
That's big.
So you've got Nick Chubb coming back versus a Bengals defense that struggles to stop the run.
Yep.
So that might be it. It might be as simple as that. Is that, okay, in that offense where they want to be able to do all those old classic play action and run and setting up all the it's a Coop Shanastani offense.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe that ends up making Deshaun Watson look a lot better. I know Shedeur Sanders to Cleveland talk has heated up a lot.
You know, I'm here for that.
Which, you know, means that's right. Yeah, it's awesome for us for offseason content.
Yes.
Is Deion angling to block Shedeur from going to Cleveland, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So I guess as much as I'm happy for Nick Chubb that he's returning, I do feel bad for him. The best thing for Nick Chubb might be for him to get injured again. don't delude Cleveland into thinking that you've got something with Deshaun Watson.
Well, and I think Cleveland, too. Look, if you're a Texan fan, I'm guessing that game is also a noon Sunday game, so most Texan fans won't be watching it. But I think Cleveland has sent out the signal that they are open for business when it comes to trades. They sent Amari Cooper, at least from a skill standpoint, maybe not statistically, but from a skill standpoint, their best receiver. They sent him to Buffalo for a third-round pick. Again, if the Texans, I think the Texans are going to be at least 6-2 after the next couple of weeks. And I think firmly, regardless of their record, firmly in the market to make some pickups here at the trade deadline, I think Cleveland is one of those teams you can start to kind of poke around like you're in the bargain bin section at Walmart a little bit, you know?
Yeah,
They've got cornerbacks, and the Texans need cornerbacks right now, you know? So that's something to keep an eye on. All right, so that's the undercard. The mid-card. And these are compelling games. I don't know how good this game is going to be, but the storylines on Sunday Night Football for the Jets and the Steelers are really juicy. This is Devontae Adams' first game as a New York Jet. Miraculously, his hamstring is healthy again. I mean, God does amazing things, like healing Devontae Adams' hamstring. And Russell Wilson is going to start for a Steelers team that, in the standings, has done good things so far this year.
Mm-hmm.
And we get Russell Wilson and Justin Fields to the bench.
And going against a very good Jets defense.
That's right.
So Russell Wilson, we've got quarterback controversy in Pittsburgh. The part about Devontae Adams' hamstring injury that's annoying me is that people are writing in articles things like this on ESPN.com talking about Devontae Adams. He appears healthy after a 3-week hamstring injury. Oh. Like, are we really just gonna act like he definitely had a hamstring injury just because they said it was a hamstring injury?
You're right. That's infuriating.
Is there anybody on earth, like, you have to at least put an asterisk there or something, right?
Yes. Yeah, or at least acknowledge.
At least
acknowledge
a hamstring injury.
I don't even think. I did this. I sarcastically, when it was reported he was healthy again, sarcastically said, it's a miracle. I'm not even throwing shade at Devontae Adams. I'm not even throwing shade at the Raiders if it was their decision. I understand it, but let's acknowledge the possibility that they put him in mothballs until they traded him. You know,
what did we all predict? This is not me being smart or something. No. We all predicted that as soon as he signed somewhere, the hamstring injury would be miraculously cured.
That's correct, yeah.
This is the alarming stat that I came up with across for the Jets right now.
Give it to me. I love this. That's a
so their
laugh.
Their six-game point total is 113 points. Okay, well, what's that relevant
you're
to?
You saying on offense? You're saying
like, yes. The Jets' six-game point total.
Yeah.
Through six games, they've scored 113 points.
Yep.
That is the exact same as it was last season after six games.
Yeah.
With Zach Wilson at quarterback.
Yeah. Are we gonna? People are really dancing around the possibility that Aaron Rodgers is a washed, bad quarterback.
Well, especially, you know, pass protection has been a problem. He's gotten hit 30 times in the last three games. But he doesn't look like younger Aaron Rodgers. I think he looks more spry and athletic than I thought he might with the Achilles tendon tear.
Yeah.
But I think he's less capable now at his age and after having suffered an Achilles tendon tear of navigating his way through poor pass protection than he ever has been at any point in his career.
You and I discussed this earlier this week with Aaron Rodgers, and people are ignoring it, and it bothers me a little bit. We've seen a bad version of Aaron Rodgers before.
Right,
this is not a great quarterback. This isn't Tom Brady, who's consistently great. I'll give you a better one. This is not Peyton Manning, who was, before the neck injury and after the neck injury, phenomenal until he wasn't anymore and he couldn't throw anymore, and he still won a Super Bowl.
Even
not
after
being able
he
to
wasn't
throw.
Phenomenal though, he did so many things above and beyond the actual physical part that
he
made up for it.
He
right?
did. But
Rodgers doesn't do that,
right? And honestly, like, even like above average core, like Matt Ryan was consistently very good throughout most of his career and then fell off a cliff. Aaron Rodgers has kind of fallen off a cliff before and then come back from it. Like, we've seen a bad version of him before. So this is not new. This could be bad, plus he's 40 years old, you know?
Right.
So there's that.
But he gets Devontae Adams.
He
so
does get Devontae.
We'll
see.
Things
get
juicy. I'm hoping
Super
for
juicy.
General juiciness. I'm hoping that Devontae Adams does make a big difference.
Be fun. Well, except in week 9. We don't need that.
Right, no, well, I mean, it makes a victory that much better
there you
over
go.
The Jets.
I like where your head's at today. Like, all these things that the Texans are getting hit with adversity, you're like, yeah, man, adversity is opportunity. Pressure is a privilege guy today.
Pressure is a privilege.
Yep.
success is rented, not bought, and the
Your slogan guy today. Seth has motivational posters all over his wall today. So that'll be fun. That Jets-Steelers game you can hear right here on Sports Radio 610. The other mid-card game, before we get to the two big ones, Baltimore-Tampa Bay is Monday Night Football. You can hear that game on Sports Radio 610 as well. That is a fun game, man. Baker Mayfield is a dark horse MVP candidate right now.
Lamar Jackson, as you might have guessed, is 6-2 versus Baker Mayfield in his career.
I can see that.
No big alarm or surprise there.
Nope.
The thing that shocked me, it wasn't even this. One thing kind of shocked me.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely if you had told me in August that this was going to be the case. The Ravens and the Bucks are first and second in the NFL in scoring. So the first part of that wouldn't have shocked me, but the second part would have been a mild surprise, even though they did good things last year.
Yeah.
Baker Mayfield, second only to Jackson in fantasy points per game this year.
Dude, he's our quarterback for me. Amy and I, the team we share, he's been amazing for us this year.
Yeah, and I know that's not a huge surprise to everybody that plays fantasy out there, but again, going back to August, and just with
we got him for like a dollar.
You lose Canales and hire a defensive-minded head coach, and it just did not seem like it was going to set up well. So full credit to Baker Mayfield and the Bucks for doing what they're doing.
We got him in like the 11th round of the draft, you know. He was not expected to be this, and they've been really, really good.
Well, Baltimore's defense has given up the second most fantasy points to quarterbacks this year, but they do have a very good run defense.
Okay. Well, there you go.
What's the over-under in this game, like 59?
Oh, good question. I know the Ravens.
I bet it's 52.
The Ravens are favored by 3.5. 49.5 is the over-under.
What'd I say, 52?
So, 52, yeah. So you should take the over on that.
Yeah.
If you think it's going to, I think it's going to be high scoring.
Based on my 7 seconds of analysis.
Why not?
Sean, I'm a little bit more learned and meticulous.
Trust your gut, Seth.
Trust your gut.
All right, semi-main event, the second biggest game on the board this week in Detroit, minus the Texans. We don't put the Texans in this exercise. Detroit at Minnesota, also a noon Sunday game, and yet it involves what I think a lot of people view the best team in the NFC right now. Either of these two teams. I think people are more buying into Detroit than Minnesota, even though Minnesota is undefeated. So we're gonna learn some things this weekend about both of these teams.
Is it simply a case, Sean, of people naturally trusting Jared Goff more than Sam Darnold?
Yes, it actually is.
I know the two storylines in all of this with the quarterbacks are fascinating.
Yep.
And just an indication that you can never be too certain about how you feel about any quarterback in the NFL ever again.
Talking about Baker Mayfield 30 seconds ago.
Right. So, the Vikings defense is very, very impressive, as we saw firsthand.
Yeah.
So the Vikings defense versus that offense and Jared Goff is going to be fascinating.
Should be fun, man. That'll be good. That's a noon Sunday game, so I imagine a lot of Texan fans won't be watching it, or you'll have it on a smaller screen maybe, but that should be a hell of a game. Detroit at Minnesota. Main event of the weekend to me, this is a late window game on Sunday. Kansas City at San Francisco, a rematch of the Super Bowl last season. Are you surprised that San Francisco is a 1.5-point favorite in this game? San Francisco 3-3. They've been up and down this season. Kansas City undefeated at this season, but not... I know it's going to sound nitpicky. Yeah. They're not an impressive 5-0 this season.
Exactly. Like what the Chiefs have been able to Astros their way through the regular season at times, and then last year especially.
Yeah.
And then obviously they've got issues with their receivers and whatnot.
Yeah.
The Chiefs are the fourth worst red zone offense in the league.
Okay.
That would be the one, and the 49ers actually aren't that much better.
Mm-hmm.
So the Chiefs obviously are very formidable defensively. Yeah, I'm surprised that I'm not surprised. I guess they've got the home field advantage, so it's a 1.5-point favorite for the 49ers. So teams still look at they're still looking at the Chiefs as the better team.
Yeah, on a neutral field. Right. If this were the Super Bowl, let's say, like the Chiefs would be a small favorite in this game on a neutral field. I am buying San Francisco -1.5. I think the Chiefs fall this weekend. I think the 49ers get the Chiefs this weekend. And which is big for me because I'm not a huge Brock Purdy guy. But Brock Purdy's been very good this year. I don't think the red zone's been an issue. You're right, But I think Purdy has been certainly better as they've gotten their record back to 500 here. I don't think Brock Purdy's been the problem with San Francisco this year.
You know, and Brock Purdy has never been an underdog in a regular season game.
I can see that. I mean, they're an awesome team. That's a great roster.
I was wondering, does that, how much of the, at first that spoke to Brock Purdy being on an awesome team.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that is transitioned towards also a grudging acceptance that Brock Purdy is a good quarterback?
It's a little of both.
Yeah,
it's a little
I feel
both,
like this
though.
Is one that, this is a game that I think maybe midway through last season the 49ers would have been an underdog.
Yes.
But now Brock Purdy has, he's earned a certain level of respect.
I think so too. So That's a pretty good card this weekend, my man.
Last week was kind of a dud.
It was.
Around the NFL.
Yes.
It just, without even any of the games, there weren't any games that maybe didn't look good on paper, but ended up being an awesome game.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a bye week for everybody last week.
It was.
So this week we're back to intrigue and storylines.
Big time.
Shedeur Sanders watch in Cleveland.
Big time, yeah. And I think the Texans-Green Bay, I think the Texans and Packers game stacks up with these last couple games we just got done talking about.
They got Romo.
They got Romo. They did.
Which matters to some people.
Stamp of approval. Yeah, for sure.
My wife, apparently. I have to watch.
Is she
excited? Keep an eye on her. Of all the guys that I thought I had to keep an eye on when they're around my wife, Tony Romo was going to be the last one I ever thought.
Yeah.
And now she just looks at Romo as like, he's just so much fun. Oh, no. Don't worry, Seth. No, he's like a brother to me. Oh, yeah. I know how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
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 That's a bad sign. That's a smoke signal.
And all of a sudden it becomes, no, it's like he's a stepbrother to me. That's just like, you know.
It's further and further.
And our parents got married when we were 21.
He's
so it's you know, lines are blurred, Seth.
He's like a third cousin in Tennessee to me.
He's like a guy I went to school with in college. Wait a minute.
Which guy? All right. So that's us stacking the card right there. We'll do the Circle of Swarm here in a minute. This is probably a good appetizer for it. Joe Mixon was on Chris Long's podcast this week, the Green Light podcast. And Chris Long, former defensive lineman in the NFL, really good analyst covering the NFL. And has a great podcast. Ask Mixon about Bobby Slowick and Stephon Diggs.
Credit to Slowick, man. I mean, he dials it up, bro. He makes sure everybody on the offense eats. And even if somebody on the lower end of touches, you know, don't touch the ball like that, no matter what, he's going to get them involved some way, somehow. You know, it might not be to, you know, however, whoever's liking. But at the end of the day, we got so many unselfish guys that we're going to do whatever it takes, you know, to win a football game. And that's all that matters. You know what I'm saying? And I think that he dials it up well. I think that what Diggs brings to our offense is definitely something special. I think that's probably what the younger receivers been looking for, or, you know, looking to be like, you know, one day. And I think that with Tank seeing what Diggs does, how he prepare, how he come to work, he bring the juice and everything like that. I mean, in terms of the outside narrative for Diggs, it's like, I think personally, he just misunderstood. Cause the guy that I see each and every day, you know, as a competitor, of him trying to be the best football player out there, you know, I think he just misunderstood, man. The guy come to work, great attitude, ready to go, get the guys going.
All right, so there you go. Stephon Diggs, misunderstood.
Two things about that. The one, the misunderstood part, I think Stephon Diggs is maybe the prime example of the evil of social media.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. If Stephon Diggs played in the early 2000s before Facebook was invented, then I don't think that you probably would have ever heard. You know, maybe there'd be some sideline eruptions or something, but it would be no big deal. It just, you look back to any of the controversy surrounding, and a lot of it just starts on social media.
Yeah.
So he just might be a guy that needs to, and to his credit, there hasn't been a hint of any kind of issue like that.
Zero.
The other part about that was Mixon talking about Bobby Slowick getting everybody involved.
Yeah.
I do like that in terms of, I think there's sometimes you hear that, and you think the old school part of you is like, guys need to play hard no matter what, and that's the way it is. There is a part, whether a guy's a good dude or a bad dude or anywhere in between, getting guys involved and getting them touches just keeps them more engaged naturally. Is going to keep them more engaged on every other part of the game.
Yes.
You talk about it with big men in basketball all the time. Just, all right, just be sure they're touching the ball and getting some opportunities and keep them plugged into the flow of the game. I think likewise, if you look at like the Cowboys right now, one of the things that's really hurting them is that the guys who aren't the primary option, the receivers, are just, they're not running their routes hard.
No.
They're not, it's, they're lazy.
Yes.
And some of that, it ultimately all comes back to McCarthy, but I wonder how much of it with them, you know, without diving into their numbers, is about just also maybe just getting guys more engaged and getting them more, the feeling the payoff of like, okay, I'm going to run my secondary routes hard, but when I'm the guy, I'm the guy.
I think one of the things that D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio, and Nick went on a long answer about this with us on Wednesday when he was on, when I asked him about when guys get their money, how do you sniff out, how do you identify guys early on bringing them into the NFL that are going to be guys who are in it for the long haul that don't really care that they just got the $30 million a year contract and they're not going to up and leave at 27 years old and say, hey, I hit my target in earnings. I don't need to take the punishment anymore. And he went on Nick, it was a really good answer. It's a long answer. About finding guys who love football and finding guys who love to compete. And I think that is the one, like, that is one thing that's at the very top of why the Texans are where they are right now, that the two of them together, I think collaborating, Nick and D'Amico, have done a really good job of bringing in guys who I think it's not lip service, you know?
Well, right, and we've seen that with the receivers, including Diggs this year, is their willingness to block.
Absolutely.
And Diggs will throw himself in front of a defensive end. Just that part of it, that goes a long, long way. Sean, as a defensive player, defensive backs especially, when I talk about guys not running their routes hard all the time, in the NFL where you got a lot of super smart defensive backs, like guys that are savvy, they can tell by body language of guys coming out of the huddle sometimes.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, the ball's not coming in.
Smell blood.
That's where, like, Jimmy Ward versus Kalen Bullock, one of the things you get Jimmy Ward is, you can read the body language of guys. You can tell if it's a run sometimes by the way the wide receivers come out of the huddle.
Yeah.
Like, you just, okay.
I'm not touching it.
Or there's one guy that always just, like, comes out of the huddle disengaged because it's a run play, lines up kind of lazy because he knows all he has to out there and step in front of the cornerback. Like, so all these things, these little clues, it adds up over the course of a season. And when you're sloppy and lazy with it, that's why some offenses, that was frankly one of the huge issues with Cliff Kingsbury's teams.
Yep.
Was that those guys got lazy and defensive backs could tell exactly what was coming because of body language.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Doesn't happen when you swarm, man. Let's do the circle of swarm. Let's do it.
You know, D'Amico always says, swarm.
What we're looking for is players, right, who are looking to swarm.
The swarm mindset, that whole mentality.
Right, we want players to have a special work ethic and a relentless mindset in everything that they do.
Who's in?
This is a special group of men, believe it.
It's the Payne and Pendergast Texans Circle of Swarm.
Circle of Swarm, there can only be six. Seth picks three, I pick three. And the criteria, basically, it's a, you know, for me, it's an accumulation of the season combined with how they've played recently last week against the Patriots with a little sliver of how much swarm do we need from this guy to go get the job done this weekend. But
some of it's aspirational.
Yes. Man, it's a subjective thing. People enjoy it. Seth picks three, I pick three. This ain't like the Circle of Trust where everybody can be in it. This is an exclusive group, and we do it every week on Friday. We're getting to a point now, this is the fifth week we've done it. We might need a swarm scoreboard at some point here pretty soon as to who's been in it the most.
Yeah, mostly, yeah. And then we can have the swarmiest player of the year at the end of the year.
We will give out the swarmies at the end of the year. Seth, you go first, man. Who's your first pick this week?
I'm going to go with Will Anderson, defensive player of the week in the NFL.
Yep.
And something Matt Burke said about him resonated with me. See if you can guess which Houston athlete I was thinking of as Matt Burke described Will Anderson's week last week.
The three sacks? I think actually Meek mentioned at one point, you could kind of tell, like you can tell with Will, I mean, he's always up. Then there's some times where you're like, man, I don't even want to be around this guy because he's that up. So, you know, he really, you know, one of our themes last week was sort of like bring our own juice, you know, and we understood like what we were going to, you know, go on the road and who knew what the weather was going to be like, all those things. And kind of, we were preaching, like, man, we got to bring our own energy, and Will really like took that to heart. And so, like, you could tell right from the jump, like pregame warmups and kind of where he was from, like almost taking it upon himself to be the heart of the team in terms of the energy and what we were trying to bring. So to see that sort of translate into the success he had, I mean, it was really cool. Just, you know, I know the stats are great, and then honestly, I just always say this, like with him, you don't even see some of the stuff. Like if there was a stat for setting edges or like just closing gaps down or forcing cutbacks to other players, like those sort of things, I mean, the TFLs and the sacks are amazing, but he does a lot of other things in the structure defense to really help out. So it's just, he's fun to be around for sure.
Will is going to be so rich someday. He's going to make so much money.
So George Springer was the athlete that I was thinking of. I'm guessing most people in their cars thought George Springer as well, because George Springer would be annoying juice to AJ Hinch at times. Like, he's just too much talking all the time. And I think just the way George Springer would run into a wall and scratch his retina, especially early in his career, I feel like Will Anderson, we know that he doesn't know how to play baseball, but if he did, he would be a George Springer type outfielder, I think. Just kind of throw caution to the wind. So yeah, for A, his performance on the field, but also for B, having that undefinable energy about him, that George Springer like energy, circle of swarm.
I love it. Circle of swarm.
Circle through swarm.
That is a good cross sport comparison. I like that a lot. My first pick is going to be Stephon Diggs. He's had a couple good games here in a row. They were missing Nico in that Buffalo game for most of that game. Diggs came up big a few times. In the Patriots game, scored the touchdown that I thought kind of really helped the Texans put some distance early in the third quarter. And I think if we're looking ahead, this might be a game where we get the chippiest version of Stephon Diggs, and we'll talk about this more in Five Reasons I Hate You. Mm-hmm. He does not like Jaire Alexander, the lead cornerback for the Packers. So based on the season, based on last week, and based on the likeliness of a very swarmy Diggs on Sunday, Stephon Diggs is my first selection for the Circle of Swarm this week.
Good choice. That would have been mine as well, Sean, if it weren't for Will Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
So my second selection, third member of the Circle of Swarm for week 7, is Neville Hewitt.
Mm-hmm.
Neville Hewitt stepped in relief of Al Shire last week. And or Henry Toa Toa at times. Yeah. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on him this week. I think that Neville Hewitt plays football the way you would want your own son to play football. He just tries to hit everything and ground it into a pulp. Sometimes it's a liability in pass coverage. So there's going to be a lot of focus on him by the Packers offense. And then Jake Hansen's not in the Circle of Swarm, but he's under that same pressure this week. So
he is.
Neville Hewitt, good job last week.
I like that. Hewitt brings it on special teams too, man. Like, I like that's a that's a good pick. And I feel very strongly that they're going to be missing at least one of those two linebackers. Considering Toa Toa is a concussion and it's Thursday, that's not something like, well, Toa Toa, he's a game time decision with a concussion. You know, like, it's, if you're out Thursday, especially Friday, you're just out. You know, you
never know. He might have cruised through the protocol though, and they're just being extra careful. I don't know.
I feel like that's one that's got a lot of rules to it. You know what I mean? Like, that's,
none of us, do any of us have the appetite anymore? Like, I feel like no matter how you feel about various CTE and everything like that, I feel like I never have an appetite to see a guy out there the week after a concussion.
Nope.
I'm like, all right, just give it a week, man. This is still an inexact science with this stuff.
Even CJ is a good example. There's no more important player to his team in the league than CJ Stroud. And I was like last year when he got the concussion.
Yeah.
I was like, no, you sit out this Titans game, man. Like,
yeah, if only because we've seen. Just that it's just they're not always 100% certain when that window of you're going to get one more easily again.
All right, circle of swarm. My second pick, Joe Mixon. Because this is the first chance we've had to put him in, really, because we started doing this in week three. Mm-hmm. So the only other good game he had was in week one. He would, if we were doing this in week two, he for sure would have been in back in week two. But 13 carries, 102 yards. And to me, Seth, clearly just the difference maker when it comes to this. If this run game is going to get to where it needs to get to, unlike the 49ers, which this offense is a cousin of, where they can just plug anybody in and it seems like the guy runs for 100 yards, the way this offense is right now, Joe Mixon is the only guy that's getting you that on the regular in this backfield.
Yeah.
And they need him this weekend against the Packers again.
Okay, so this is where I'm torn.
Okay.
I'm almost considering.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I know I can't do it. I want to put Danico Autry in the circle of swarm.
I thought about
even though
that.
He hasn't played yet.
I thought about that.
I put together a little highlight reel of him yesterday for a video I did.
Yeah.
And I was getting like I was actually making noises alone in my room, just like yeah. Boy. And yet he hasn't done it for the Texans yet. So I can't do it just yet. What was I just gonna say?
Junkyard dog, bad MF-er.
Yeah, but he hasn't done it in a Texans uniform yet.
Okay.
So I'm gonna go with Dameon Pierce.
Look at Dameon Pierce,
circle of swarm.
All right,
Dameon Pierce showing something. The thing that we've said all offseason and during training camp was, all right, yes, the blocking is bad.
Yeah.
But where is the Dameon that breaks tackles the way he did in 2022? And I think on that touchdown run, it wasn't a perfectly blocked play. It was well blocked at the perimeter, but there were three unblocked dudes. But Dameon's willingness to, as he said, run through the smoke to see, hey, the linebackers have over-pursued on this. I'm just going to hit it vertical. And he broke a couple tackles on the way to green grass and then showed explosiveness in the open field. So Dameon Pierce, back in the circle of swarm.
I like that.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem,
you're welcome, Dameon.
Yeah, you're very welcome. That's it's cool. We're happy to do it. This is a more prestigious honor for him than that scepter that he got from Kyle Brandt at the NFL Honors, I think.
Well, yeah, because we're not
week seven circle
so
of swarm.
Overly hyped, like almost to a Will Anderson degree about presenting it to him. Yeah.
Will Anderson, who looks like he's about to have a heart attack, is what Kyle Brandt looks like. He might keel over during some of these.
Nervous about him when he goes on these little rages where he goes into his WWE promo mode,
like, and he's not in that Princeton football shape anymore. Like, he's still looks like he works out, but he's got, you know, he's a dad now. He's a little older. Like, he's, you know, he's got, you know, kind of.
I think he's actually still super lean, but because some guys, because he's wearing he's not wearing a suit all the time or anything.
No,
I don't know. Some guys just.
He's on the TV right now. He's a little husky. You know, he's not in bad shape.
I thought he was just in shape with maybe a pudgier face, but he's got kind of like a square face, so it looks fatter on television than it actually is.
We'll need him to take his shirt off at some point and make the
determination. I usually see him at the Super Bowl. I'll bring the fat calipers and
the back of the tricep thing there?
Yeah,
the little,
yeah.
What do you call it? Calipers, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, last one.
Calipers.
Last one. I've never heard that word before, yeah.
Yeah.
Last one for me, and I know that the circle of swarm is a circle. But as I look at the list here that we have, Will Anderson at the beginning, handful of names, and then we got the last bullet point. If I turn this list on its side, it looks like a defensive line with Will Anderson on one end, and I'm putting Danielle Hunter on the other end. He is my last choice in the circle of swarm. I think Danielle Hunter, it hasn't translated into sacks, but I think he's been doing a lot of things that Matt Burke gave Will Anderson credit for in that cut that we played. I think Danielle Hunter's been doing a lot of those same things on the other side, applying pressure, setting the edge. He's been a veteran leader in that locker room. And he had the biggest play, in my opinion, of that Patriots game. That sack to start the second half, strip sack fumble, I thought really kind of just it brought that game back inside the guardrails for the Texans a little bit. You know, because they scored two plays later after that.
Yeah, D'Amico had talked about how what a critical situation that was when he was on the coach's show, I think.
Yeah, it was huge.
Just that it was in a moment where it looked like they'd let the Patriots kind of claw their way back into that game.
Gave them hope.
Something to change it.
Yeah.
Plus, with Will and Daniil's performance last week, we know the Texans had had the most pressures in the league, but they weren't really racking up sacks.
Mm-hmm.
They're up to fifth most sacks in the NFL now.
There you go.
Year.
Okay.
They're at 19. The Giants have the most with 26, and the Texans are in fifth place at 19.
That is one part of the Giants that is translating into what they thought it would be in the offseason when they brought in Brian Burns, put him with Kayvon Thibodeau. I mean, they got a good defensive line. Kayvon Thibodeau, Dexter Lawrence is having a huge year for them. I mean, they suck still. They're not good. But they do have a good defensive line, for sure. All right, that's the Circle of Swarm. So to recap, this is who Seth and I put in for Week 7. Will Anderson, Stephon Diggs, Neville Hewitt, two running backs, Joe Mixon, Damian Pierce, coming off of their big performances against the Patriots, and we put Danielle Hunter in as the last one. Thoughts, 713-572-4610. Top of the hour, we'll circle back to the Texans and the Packers, Will Anderson, C.J. Stroud. There were owners' meetings this week in Atlanta, and they accomplished a few things. One, I think, still has one fan base very hopeful. There's another that people are reacting to, and it's bananas right now with the reaction to something that the owners approved this week in Atlanta. We will get to that coming up next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, the owners had a meeting in Atlanta this week, and they approved a handful of things. The biggest one, the biggest story is Tom Brady is now an owner for the Raiders. We'll get to that in just a second. The other things, the Jags are not going anywhere anytime soon in terms of moving to London full-time. All the renovations to Everbank Stadium approved by the owners, so there will be no full-time team in London, particularly the Jaguars anytime. Jags are still going to play over there plenty, I'm sure, because of Shad Khan. You know, he owns a soccer team over there, Wembley Stadium and so forth. The next four Super Bowls are set. As far as venue goes, we know this year is New Orleans, Santa Clara the year after, L.A. the year after that, and Atlanta, maybe that's why they held the meetings there, they get a Super Bowl in 4 years. So those are the next four Super Bowls. The league is still reviewing Deshaun Watson's already settled lawsuit.
Yeah.
That's the lawsuit where Deshaun settled it recently. He was accused of what appeared to, in the transcript or in the lawsuit, constituted rape. It was different, probably more disturbing than the other lawsuits that he had with the massage therapist. It's been settled. I don't know what the parameters were of the settlement, Seth, when it comes to the alleged victim talking to the NFL. But Roger Goodell said that they are still investigating it for whatever that's worth.
So they're investigating, and I'm guessing that they'll run into a brick wall, because I would imagine that there was some kind of non-disclosure attached to the settlement.
Yeah.
And there you go. But so they got to do their due diligence, or at least look like they're doing their due diligence.
Yep.
There's a part of me that, at the very least, that hopefully the compensation was fair or what have you, but the NFL, they're damned if they do and damned if they don't in these situations, because whenever they go to try to talk to the alleged victim, they get accused of harassing the victim.
Yeah.
If they don't talk to the victim, alleged victim, then, they don't even actually really
care.
They're
negligent. So,
yeah. So, like, people just love to pile on one way or the other. I do think that in the case of Deshaun Watson, I think the NFL did try to do an actual investigation. The judge that gave the penalty, because a lot of people thought that the 11-game suspension was shy, she sounded very conflicted in doing it, in that, like, her hands were kind of tied by precedent for how much. But she flat out said, yeah, he did all this stuff. The original suspension.
Yeah.
Like, she flat out said, oh, yeah, he did it. Yep. But this is where I can and can't do certain things.
That's
so
right.
Yeah, I think that the NFL is trying to do the right thing, whatever the right thing is.
You know, in Cleveland, they are hoping he gets suspended so that his guarantees get revoked on his contract.
Yeah.
So they can get out from under at least, the next couple years' worth of salary. There would still be a hefty dead money penalty for Cleveland if they were to move on from him, but it's a whole lot easier to move on if the next 2 years of $46 million a year are not guaranteed, right?
Do you think Shedeur Sanders would... Do you think there's any part of Shedeur and Deion that would be okay with going to Cleveland?
Any part of it? I don't know. Maybe. I mean, the roster's pretty good, but it's aging. Maybe there's something about being a hero to, you know, to take the most downtrodden franchise in the history of the recent NFL, at least, and raise
like
them.
A Jackson State type of scenario.
Kind of.
Like, where I think maybe Deion looks at it like, yeah, you're the underdog here, and people don't think you can do it, but, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that would be it. I mean, it's a bad ownership group. Deshaun's going to be in the building for at least a couple years because they literally mathematically can't get rid of him right now.
Like, I mean, he wouldn't physically be there, though.
Yeah, probably not. But you would at least...
It was just like he was... I remember Deshaun was physically with the Texans for a while, and then he wasn't.
Yeah. So anyways, they're still investigating Deshaun. The biggest news coming out of the owners' meetings was Tom Brady is now an owner. He owns 5% of the Las Vegas Raiders. His business partner, whose name I can't recollect right now, he owns 5% as well. And then there's a little sliver they sold to Richard Seymour, also former Raider and former Patriot.
Yeah.
Richard Seymour in for 0.5%. How about that?
0.5%?
0.5% of the NFL team is pretty nice, man.
You know the nice thing about this?
Good mailbox money right there for Richard Seymour.
Well, and especially given the fact that probably, I don't know how it all works and everything with the minority ownership, but it's not like Tom Brady even had to put any of his own cash out there.
Probably not.
You can get it's like buying a AAA bond, you know, investing in an NFL franchise. So he probably leveraged it a little bit if you're allowed to. It's 200. They cut him a sweetheart deal by only having him pay $220 million, was it?
Is that what it ended up being? It was $175 at first. I didn't see what the final
at
number
point,
was.
Yeah, I guess at $175, I think the owners were like, no, that's too much of it. Like, you're giving him a Tom Brady
way
discount.
Too good of a deal. Yeah. So the crazy things about the Brady ownership with the Raiders now. One, I think it's really funny that people somehow think that Tom Brady, as a 5% owner in the Raiders, is going to be able to sprinkle some magic Patriot dust on the Raiders, and all of a sudden, I'm seeing a lot of that. Like, oh, you know, they're going to get now. They're going to get this guy as a coach, and maybe Belichick. I saw people say maybe Belichick goes to the Raiders now. I'm like, Brady left the Patriots because of Bill Belichick. Like,
plus he's but he probably can appreciate. He understood and knew the entire time he was there, like, what the personal dynamics were, and he probably totally, even though it was time for him to move on. If Tom Brady were to say, like, oh yeah, oh no, we're gonna have a quarterback have a Hall of Fame career for 20 years, and then he's gonna grow tired of it.
Yeah.
Look, he's a 5% owner.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is like me going up to a senator waving around my savings bond and be like, hey, this is how America's going to run now because I'm invested in this.
Yeah,
because
I have a bond. This is crazier than the reactions, like the Patriot level reactions to this. The restrictions that are placed on Tom Brady, I would submit, make it impossible for him to do the job that he signed up for a year ago. At the best possible level that he can. He's being paid $37 million a year by Fox to be their number one color analyst on their NFL broadcasts every week. These are the restrictions that have been placed, among the many restrictions placed on Tom Brady. He's not allowed access to other teams' facilities and practices, and cannot attend broadcast production meetings. Like, this is like being a salesperson and not being allowed to attend sales meetings.
The production meetings, though, I believe are the ones where they have them with the players and coaches.
Right.
So, like, he can't sit there and interview the players on the team and everything.
Right.
This softened for me a little bit when it was divulged that he will be able to watch the recordings of those meetings and everything.
Okay.
So, so he gets to watch the film of it as opposed to asking the questions himself.
I think Brady would ask really good questions if he were in
right.
Those
oh meetings. Yeah, yeah. No, you're 100% looking at it from the network's perspective.
I'm looking at it from a fan's perspective too.
It would be really valuable to have Tom Brady in there, especially because quarterbacks when they get to talk to Tom Brady are going to tell him everything.
Right. That diminishes whatever. And I don't get to watch it very much because we're doing Texan stuff. I'm putting myself in the shoes of a fan who sits down on Sundays and watches the number one Fox broadcast. And I'm like, I'm getting like a C version of Brady here because he didn't get to talk to to Baker Mayfield or, you know,
yeah,
or
talk
Lamar
exactly
Jackson.
About what was it that yeah. worked for you, Baker Mayfield. And, hey, I remember when I had this issue. How'd you fix it? All that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, he's watching video of Kevin Burkhardt's questions. BFD. No disrespect to Kevin Burkhardt. But this is why you sign up Tom Brady. So you get the best version of the GOAT, man. And it's you're just not getting that. Here's the big one from the the writer of this column against Mike Sando says, for purposes of this column, as an owner, Brady is also not allowed to publicly criticize. Oh, this is Richard Deitch's column. He's not allowed to publicly criticize officials or other teams and could be fined or suspended if the league feels he breaks that policy. You can't do an NFL broadcast and not be able to criticize the officials and other teams.
This is the color analyst, especially, where you just ought to be like, you're supposed to bring some emotion to it. Where the play-by-play guy is, you know, maybe playing it straight. Yeah, I don't know. They're gonna have to bring on an extra analyst to argue with the rules analyst that they'll have on.
Dude,
yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. So far, I the first game I got to watch an extended amount of Tom Brady
yeah.
as a commentator was I went and watched most of the TV broadcasts of the. The Cowboys game from this last week.
Yep.
The Lions-Cowboys game.
Cowboys,
and I thought he did a good job. There were a few moments in there I'm like, okay, I really like having Tom Brady's opinion on mm-hmm. this. But I don't think he's at a level yet where like, well, yeah, it's worth any kind of restrictions to have this guy on the broadcast. It's gold.
Yeah.
It's gold.
Right.
I'm not there yet.
I'm not either. And I'm definitely not there if all of a sudden he's been completely neutered. You know, like, what's if you can't criticize, what are you there for?
I don't, for the life of me, I still don't understand why anybody would ever want to own an NFL team. Even a minority ownership. I don't want
really?
Any part of it.
Yeah, oh, I don't know.
Don't want it.
5%?
Don't need it.
It's a nope. cash cow. You just sit back and get
there's other thing. There's other things that are better cash cows than, like, commercial real estate.
Yeah.
Anything and everything that isn't just under so much public scrutiny, not to mention exposure yeah. to liability and everything else.
I'm guessing these minority owners probably have some commercial real estate as well. You know?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Probably like everything.
It's an ego purchase at the end of the day.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, into the 8 o'clock hour we go. Will Anderson and C.J. Stroud. I'm feeling really good about the cornerstone of the franchise aspect that these two have for the next several years based on some of the things they said this week. We will have that. We'll do 5 reasons I hate you, Green Bay, and we found 5. Don't worry. We'll do that at 8:25. That is coming. CJ and Will coming up next.